All right, let's Monday this thing. Good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Look, everybody's got their struggles, all right? If you're Ryan Hickey, your Penn State football team lost to Iowa. That's a rough one. If you are a neutral or a Mariners fan, I think you were rooting mostly for Seattle. That's a team that's never won a World Series. I guess if you love baseball, you get a Game 7 in the ALCS. We had that intensity over the weekend. We'll talk about that. Some college football, a college football firing, a bunch of things going on, some NFL news. We will talk about all of it. Ari Mirov is going to be on the program to hang out with us later in the show. We'll give you five things you need to know on college football to kind of catch you up. I was giving Ryan a hard time off the bat of the show because it feels good and I enjoy it. The Colts might be really the best. Here's the thing. I don't think the Colts are the best team in the NFL. I don't think they're one of the best teams in the NFL, but, man, they're playing really good football. We will talk about that. Tua Tagovailoa causing some problems on the field, causing some problems off the field. Little breaking news just came out that it sounds like he won't be replaced, but I'll let you listen to why his head coach would certainly, it sounds like to bench the guy. Phone number 888-710-4ISN. All right, I got some bad news. I got some bad news for everybody. Earmuffs if the kids are in the car. You're not going to want to hear this, but I just got to be straight with you. The Kansas City Chiefs are back. I know everybody hates the Chiefs. I know half the world hates the Chiefs because of the tight end's girlfriend. I know everybody else hates them because they beat up on their own team. And we get tired and frustrated and annoyed by the same teams over and over and over again. You've already sensed that with the Dodgers, and they haven't even won a back-to-back World Series yet. Although they're four games away as they await the winner of Blue Jays Mariners. The problem is when you look at this weekend's, if you're anti-Chiefs, I know I'm not. I'm the wrong messenger here. I like watching. You know what? I say that. I'm getting a little annoyed by how often the Chiefs win. And I've been accused of being a Chiefs homer. But the takeaway from this weekend of football for me is that the only certainty that is out there in the National Football League this year is that the Kansas City Chiefs are still the Kansas City Chiefs. And it's not just behind the 31-0 drubbing they put on the Raiders. It's not just the fact that Kansas City, and I know 4-3 doesn't scream dominant football team, but it should because they've won two in a row. They've won 4 of 5. Remember, they got off to that really bad start. It's the fact that Rashee Rice is back, and his first game back, the dude caught 2 touchdown passes, as if just to signal, not only am I here having missed a big chunk of the season, but the impact everybody speculated that I could have made if I was around was real. The Chiefs are healthy, they're in rhythm, they're in a groove, and the National Football League, or at least the 7 teams that played them on behalf of the National Football League, who could have put the Chiefs down when there was an opportunity, failed to do it. And in the context of the rest of the division and the rest of the AFC, the reality is that the thing that many of you feared, you Chiefs haters out there, those of you that are tired of Kansas City doing it again and again, those of you, maybe rightfully so, who think they get the benefit of the doubt in a way that's almost conspiratorial from the National Football League in terms of officiating, all of you who wanted Kansas City not to be the team that has never failed, not a single season under Patrick Mahomes as a starter, that has never failed to at least make the AFC Championship game, those of you that thought that those days were over, or at least on pause, you were wrong. They're going to be fine. They're back. Chargers, one of the challengers in the division, lost to the Colts. Look, Colts are a good football team. They got hammered. They got hammered by Indy. Came back to earth. I know that Denver won that game. I know the Broncos are 5-2. I understand they've got a lead on Kansas City in the AFC West. They had to score 33 points in the fourth quarter against a junior college NFL football team, the New York Giants, in order to do that. Great comeback. Remarkable offensive performance at the end of the game. The fact that the Broncos game was in doubt against New York for me just underscores my continued skepticism, my reluctance to say, yeah, I think Sean Payton and the Broncos are the real deal. I don't. I'd still bet on the Chargers to go further in the postseason than the Broncos. And you look at the rest of the AFC, and we all kind of know this. Outside of the Buffalo Bills, who are you afraid of? Ravens season is over. Bengals season is probably over. And here come the Chiefs. And the biggest problem, if you were rooting for Kansas City to be mediocre, to be mid, to not be challenging, to not be dangerous, your biggest thing you were rooting for, that you were looking at, was the fact that Mahomes was kind of basic the first few games. And that offense was was stagnant over the course of the first couple games as they missed a couple receivers and Kelce wasn't really in rhythm and the offensive line didn't look very good. And Mahomes a few weeks ago in their last loss had a brutal turnover in that game. Those moments are over. The reinforcements have arrived. There's a level of rhythm for this Chiefs team. There's a muscle memory of excellence in winning that has kicked in for an organization that's won a multitude of Super Bowls. And Mahomes talked about it in the context of Rice being back and what it means, the fact that this Kansas City Chiefs team, that the NFL should have put down, should have held to two wins while they could have, are going to be going forward at 4-3 now, the version with Rice and the rest of these guys being right that we've seen in the past.
We have a lot of weapons. We have a lot of guys, and they all love each other, and they all want each other to succeed. So, I mean, having him and Trav working underneath with Hollywood and Hollywood downfield, Taekwon downfield, Xavier downfield, you don't know where it's coming from. And so Juju's out there making plays happen. And so guys are just ready to go out there, and when they get their opportunity, they're going to make the plays. And you saw that throughout the entire game. Everybody made plays, and it might be one guy's game one game, and then it might be another guy's game the next game.
I mean, by the way, when he puts it that way, when you kind of get into his brain, when he lets us see what he's seeing as plays unfold, you understand the ways in which now all of these options are going to tap back into the greatness that Mahomes obviously proven that he has when he steps onto the field. Rice himself was good. He had 7 catches for 42 yards, and he had those 2 touchdowns. But this is the first time that Rice and Worthy and Hollywood Brown have played together. And they combined for 12 catches, 91 yards, and 3 touchdown passes. And what that does is it liberates Mahomes to be a little more creative, to confound defenses that wanted to put their energy and efforts in trying to get in his face. It allows someone like Travis Kelce, who is, let's be honest, a step or 2 steps slower than he was a couple seasons ago, not to have to carry the team, to just be available as a 4th or 5th option. It makes life so much easier on the running game. And I know it's the Raiders. I get that it's the Raiders. And I told you last week that Lions win was season-defining, that it was a turnaround. Kansas City is also getting a little bit of help from the football gods. We'll wait to see what happens with Jaden Daniels. If you missed this, not just the loss, hamstring injury, MRI scheduled for today. We'll see if Ari knows much about it when he's on in an hour. That's next up for Kansas City. If you looked at the schedule at the start of the NFL season and you said in a vacuum, wow, Chiefs at Commanders, that's a tough game for the Chiefs. It is maybe as easy as a possible game as it could be at this moment in time, because we don't know if that quarterback is going to be healthy. The Commanders are not right, and the Chiefs are in that groove and that rhythm when they play like this, when they have this level of confidence, when their offense is operating as if nobody can touch them. And that's what Mahomes sounded like when he talked after the game. It doesn't matter where they play. It doesn't matter they're going to Buffalo in a couple weeks. Doesn't matter they're going to Denver after that. Doesn't matter they're playing the Colts after that. Doesn't matter they're playing at a Dallas team that I don't believe in. Whatever, had a good weekend, has some offense. The Chiefs team that we saw the first couple weeks, not right offensively, maybe a little bit of a hangover from that beatdown in the Super Bowl, maybe taking for granted the grind and the difficulty of the NFL because they're so dominant, it's over. 4-3 is the worst they're going to be. This is a team that's right. And Andy Reid, who's not one to go into, and I've covered these, to go into press conferences after games and do cartwheels, emotionally speaking. I don't know that, not to pick on the guy, I'm not sure. I mean, I can't do a cartwheel, so I'm not, but you know what I'm saying. Reed, head coach of the Chiefs, also hit on something that I think the eye test showed us yesterday, and I guess he did need to watch the game to see 31-0, but everything about the Chiefs looked like a team, and Andy Reid talked about this, where at every level, earlier than they tend to, by the way, because it's usually week 11, 12. At every level, this team is clicking in a scary way.
There's a lot of people that played really well, and I'm proud of them for that. That coming off an emotional win against the Lions, and then coming into this thing and playing with the energy that we played with. I thought the coordinators had great plans. Like I said, all 3 phases contributed.
There's also nothing more dangerous than pissing off an all-time great. When people would make Tiger mad at the height of his heyday, even rightfully so, he'd go out there and shoot 67. When people would piss off Michael Jordan is when he'd be at his best. I'm going to drop a soccer one for you. Because Leo Messi's doing crazy things in MLS. Just did. Golden Boot, whatever that is. Messi's a pretty nice guy. He's a sort of weirdly introverted dude. But if you've watched enough Messi magic, you know, if a guy kicks him or gets at him or disrespects him in the media, this happened in the World Cup, he goes bonkers. The Chiefs as a collective are not unaware that you all think they're cheaters. The Chiefs as a collective are not unaware that you all think the NFL have gifted them their success, or at least that there's that idea, that narrative, that view is running somewhat through the conversation about Kansas City. The Chiefs are not unaware that getting no penalties called on them for the second time in 75 years led to a lot of you saying these guys don't deserve this victory and this win, and you saw a team that responded in kind. I kind of feel bad for the Raiders. They got beaten every facet of the football game, in part because the Chiefs said, it's time to stop bleeping around, because everybody pissed them off. And it doesn't mean that you're wrong. And it doesn't mean that it's wrong when somebody kicks Messi or fouls Jordan, but the greats, when they feel like someone has not given them the dignity they deserve, when their arrogance is trampled on, when their sense of, I wear a halo, how dare you not bow to me, they go to the next level. And the Chiefs did it over the weekend. And they're going to do it going forward. This is a great football team. And I guess I'm going to disrespect a bunch of teams now. Who do you fear? And it's early in the season. But who do you fear if you're Kansas City? Do you fear a 5-2 Patriots team? And they played really, really good football. No, you do not. I think you still fear Buffalo if you're almost any team in the National Football League. And I know that they've lost a couple games in a row. And if I'm in any other conversation talking football about anything else other than this Kansas City topic, I'm giving Buffalo their flowers. I'm pointing out that most teams lose games and have these moments and streaks. I'm telling you, Josh Allen is that guy. But you know and I know, not against Kansas City. Never against Kansas City. Not a single time in the history of Josh Allen's career in the playoffs against Kansas City. And so while Buffalo's the second best team for me to bet on, to believe in, to sort of lean into, their best opportunity, the Bills, to make a Super Bowl was the Chiefs not becoming the thing they become again, which is the Chiefs that we all know and love and hate and are jealous of. Do you believe in the Steelers? I absolutely do not. Do you believe in the Jaguars? They're 4-3. I just threw them in because they beat the Chiefs a few weeks ago. I do not. Do you believe in the Colts? Only Ryan Hickey does. That tells you everything you need to know. Their run game is really good. Their offense is really good. I'll take Kansas City in a show. By the way, I'll take Kansas City on the road against any of these teams in the playoffs. Do you believe in the Broncos? I will remind you that the Broncos just barely beat the Giants and barely beat the Jets in their last couple games. I know that's an amazing fourth quarter comeback win. It's equally a collapse of the Giants as it is some magical testament to Bo Nix being the guy and Sean Payton being a genius. Do you believe in the Chargers? You don't. I know the Chiefs are 4-3. I know that this is the same story again and again and again and again. And it's not as maybe as sexy as pretending that the Colts are the best team in the AFC or whatever lie I'm supposed to tell you. I'm not going to lie to you. There's a reason that Mahomes does nothing but, at a minimum, but get to an AFC championship game. Minimum. Because he's that guy and they're that team. There was the opportunity, there was the chance to put Kansas City in the same position that the Bengals are in, that the Ravens are in. To basically make them have to pull a miracle to salvage their season. Which the Chiefs could still have done. But they don't need a miracle now. They are just fine. They're probably going to win their division. They're fine on the road in the postseason. Rice is back. They are healthy. The offense has the tools that Andy Reid needs to move those pieces on the chessboard the way that he wants. And you can hear and see the swagger in that game from the defense, from Mahomes. I am sorry, everybody. Kids, you can take your hands off your ears. Earmuffs over. The Kansas City Chiefs are back. And we are going to be talking about them as the team to beat 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks from now. That's just the way it's going to be. 888-710-4ISN. There's a slap on the face for a Monday morning. 888-7. I actually like the Chiefs. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. All right, let's give the Colts a little bit of love. And let's, Tua Tagovailoa, I got to give this guy credit. Last week he said something that didn't make any sense. He said, void of silence? Was that what it was? And I thought, Tua will never come to a microphone, at least this year, and say something more perplexing, more problematic, more annoying, that calls into question his ability to be a leader. At least this is the low point, right? Peaks and valleys, and we got to the valley. I was wrong, because you know what Tua did this after the game? After the Dolphins got destroyed, he got a shovel, and he dug himself a giant hole, and he jumped in it. And I'm going to let you hear that next year on Rider Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Welcome back to Writer Than You.
That's what I'm realizing. People are people. What an insight I just brought. People are people. I'm going to win a macaroni award. I'm going to win two macaronis this year. Marconi, macaroni, you say potato, I say potato. Let's go.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. The Dolphins are awful, and there's a lot of blame to go around. They got absolutely hosed over the weekend. Look, the Raiders got destroyed 31-0, but at least they were playing the Kansas City Chiefs, who have found their groove. Not that that's a huge consolation for the Raiders, but it's a big difference in losing 31-6 to the Browns, to a Cleveland team whose season should have been over, although, whatever, here they go. What a way to make Dylan Gabriel, he actually didn't look that good, but whatever. Dylan Gabriel kind of W on the old box score. Tua Tagovailoa was absolutely abysmal in this game. 12 of 23, I shouldn't laugh. He completed basically half of his passes, 100 yards passing. He threw three picks, and we know that part of the storyline, the question, the interesting reality of this Dolphins team and its quarterback was how he was going to play and how his team would respond to him after he basically called out his own teammates for not being the kind of leaders they need to be and being late to meetings and having a lot of pushback, including publicly with names on it. Some people saying, yeah, I don't know if this is the guy that should be saying it. One former player said he missed meetings when I was there for my cup of coffee. So, beatdown happens. The Browns dominate the Dolphins. And the Dolphins look like a team that know that they'd rather eat nails than hang out with their quarterback, who know that their head coach is going to be fired, who know that there's a total reset coming. They've been through this before. I may owe Brian Flores a big apology, by the way. Man. And I was contemplating that over the week, and I was thinking about maybe Brian Flores, former head coach of the Dolphins. I was very hard on. I may or may not have nicknamed Brian, doesn't know where the floor is because of how he treated Tua. And at the time, I thought it was petty and petulant and weirdly personal. And maybe it was all those things because Tua's the worst. Maybe he's just the worst. And why do I think that? Because after last week's void of silence silliness, he came to the podium yesterday. And you tell me what you think. It sure sounds like, after the loss, Tua bemoaned the great difficulty, the scales of justice, of having to balance playing with leading.
Just trying to maneuver everything and trying to you know, build a collection of guys to kind of bring along with me. And I got to be able to kind of be able to multitask, if that makes sense. Be able to do that. And while doing that, kind of continue to get the whatever it was last year and the years prior for myself to get going again and get in that flow.
I mean, if you can't multitask as a quarterback in the National Football League, you should go do something else for a living. Also, what does build a collection of guys mean? He's not the GM. These aren't trading cards. What is he talking? So that's Tua. Would you like to know what it sounds like when a head coach has to coach this guy? When a head coach can barely win a football game? When a head coach has gone from, and this is Mike McDaniel, I think, celebrated wunderkind a few years ago to walking unemployment line example. He's not fired yet. He certainly will be. And your quarterback is, if this is what your quarterback is saying in public, think about what he's doing in private. Listen to poor Mike McDaniel, who clearly exasperated with his quarterback, was hinting after the game, this is about Tua for me, maybe there are some changes coming.
There's a lot of guys that will have an important work week because we're not, I mean, if you are negatively affecting the football team routinely, I don't have a choice but to, assess a different player, and I have to coach a lot better as well.
Very clear. Okay, threw that in the end. Yeah, I have to coach better. No kidding. He's talking about Tua. He's not talking about the punter, okay? He's not talking about one of the linebackers. And the thing is, he doesn't have a choice, it sounds like, because Ian Rappaport just reported 30, 40, 50 minutes ago that they don't expect changes to the quarterback position. And what are you going to do? You're going to play Quinn Ewers? I mean, I don't even know what the alternative is. And remember, Tua is not on his rookie deal. This isn't Anthony Richardson, who checked himself out and they invested something, but they're not totally tied to him. This is a guy who has gotten his extension, who makes a bunch of money, who has money coming for years. They are tied to this guy. It is a major problem. It's probably not going to be Mike McDaniel's problem. Frankly, before the Rappaport report came out, my thought was, just bench him. You're never going to coach him again. Mike McDaniel's not going to be the head coach of this team 2 days after the regular season ends. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not the head coach 2 days after this show today ends. I guess he would have been fired before he got on the plane. But it's all over but the shouting for Mike McDaniel. And Tua, when McDaniel becomes a coordinator somewhere else, maybe a coach again, maybe, he is not going to be coaching Tua Tagovailoa. He's not going to be in those meetings like, you know what we should do? We should bring in Tua. See how that goes. He's got a void of silence we could utilize. He's not doing it. It's not happening. So bench the dude. Doesn't matter to you. It's not your problem. Maybe, and if your GM or your owner kind of hinted, don't bench Tua, bench him. It'll speed up the process. Sometimes when you know your girlfriend's going to break up with you, right? You did something stupid. You got drunk. You're done. Whatever. You just want to speed it up. Haven't you? You know, you've ever picked a fight, right? It's coming. She's going to break up with me in 3 weeks. I might as well just move on. So bench Tua regardless. All right, let me give the Colts a little bit of love. I don't know how much love I want to give them. Let me bring in our resident Colts expert here. I put that in air quotes. Good morning, Ryan Hickey. So you're wearing, let me ask you this, and I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm really not. You're wearing a Colts shirt today.
Yes, I am.
Why not wear a Penn State shirt? Why not show solidarity with your program in the face of the difficulties? They lost to Iowa. Those of you who don't know, close game, though.
Neil Beiderk. I will say that Iowa won the
Neil
game.
Neil Beiderk.
I saw someone, an Iowa fan, say this is the biggest win in Iowa football history in like the last 4 years.
Nobody said that.
Someone said that.
Was it Tua Tagovailoa?
Someone, actually, you know, said that.
Who?
Chris Hassel.
Oh, Chris, get out. Chris is a little ridiculous. Come on.
Biggest Iowa win in four. Anyway, backup quarterback, no coach.
That's a terrible take. That's my former colleague at CBS Sports.
They lost by one on the road. I didn't expect much. They competed. Fine. Whatever. But I don't know how you feel about this. I have a big rule. If my team loses,
yeah,
the next day or the, you know, if over the weekend, the next work day, cannot wear any gear the losing team.
Opposite.
Cannot do it.
So I'm the opposite. I'll wear, if Barcelona loses a bad one, and they tend to, I wear it the next day to show my solidarity. And so when people, oh, you see they lost? Like, yeah, man, I'm a real fan. Who's your team? I don't even care. They suck too. I take the exact opposite approach.
That drives me crazy.
Exact opposite approach.
The losers don't deserve it. You lost the game. For one day, I'm punishing
you
in my mind.
That makes you a loser of a fan. That makes you that. No wonder you were a Notre Dame fan for the 5 years that I knew you, and now you disavow.
I'm holding them accountable.
No.
You lost the game. I'm not going to look like a fool because I'm going to sit here and wear my Penn State shirt. I'll wear it tomorrow.
I'm holding you accountable.
I'll wear it on Friday for, you know.
You fair weather fan.
Oh, my goodness.
Has there ever been a quarterback in recent memory, right, who is so bound by who his running back is? And it's not even a criticism of Daniel Jones. But when he's got a run game behind, I mean, he was really good in that game. He's been really good this year. I mean, I don't know if it's Sam Darnold levels of excellence like Darnold did last year, but I don't think it's that far off, and certainly in terms of impact and their record. But it's the run game. I mean, Jonathan Taylor is an absolute machine. We know Saquon was back in the day. And by the way, it's not a criticism. Most quarterbacks need a great offensive line to be successful. All quarterbacks are aided by a run game. I just mean this in the sense of Daniel Jones, when put in the right situation, can be really good. Now, the right situation is a really good run game. But that's fine. That's not a shot. You put Tua Tagovailoa on this team, and they've won two games, and he's talking about, you know, cones of voids of silence or whatever. So credit Daniel Jones, but just an interesting turnaround for him and a pattern in his career that with a run game, he's really good. And without one, he's booted somewhere else.
Some quarterbacks, right? Mahomes, Josh Allen, I can do it right. Themselves, be heroes. Jaden Daniels.
Tom Brady. Argue,
Tom Brady.
Yeah, I mean, Brady's Brady, but
a lot needed. Now, the thing is, right, which is why I don't think a lot of teams do this, and more they try to go the hero quarterback route, is because it's hard to maintain, right? Jonathan Taylor's playing really well. Well, he's going to want to get a contract extension. These receivers, tight end, Tyler Warren's looked really good so far early on. not anytime soon, but 2-3 years, he's going to want a contract extension. It's hard to keep everyone together, right? So you, like, it makes sense. Running game, good O-line, good receivers.
Right. And
anyone's going to shine.
You also, you can have a successful quarterback without a great offensive line. It's really hard. We've seen it from Mahomes. It doesn't matter who you are, this side of Barry Sanders, which is a long time ago, it's very hard to have an effective run game if you don't have at least a decent offensive line. I mean,
Absolutely.
No one's running through a brick wall. There just doesn't matter how fast they are, how talented they are, how quickly they can start and stop. They're not doing it. All right, here's my question for you. You guys are 6-1. Beating the Chargers is a good win. I don't know if it's a great win, but it might be. It might be. It's certainly a good win. How good? Your fandom is a little over the top. You're sometimes irrational with your love for your teams. I actually respect, and I really do. I'm the same way. Every year I think the Bears are going to win 11 games. So I'm actually commiserating with you. I'm not judging you. But if you can try to be a little nonpartisan here, how good do you think the Colts are? Because we have seen teams in the past, and I always bring up the Arizona Cardinals from a few years ago, but there's others, start really strong and fade. And we've seen teams not be great for a long stretch of the season, get hot at the end of the year, and win the whole thing. Think Aaron Rodgers, Packers championship run. There's other examples too. What are the Colts? You watch every game, right, with a keen eye.
I think they are a legit top five offense. The thing that scares me is I don't trust their defense. And even yesterday, they scored 38 points. There was a point in the fourth quarter where the Chargers were one drive away from like making this a real game. You're like, what are we doing here?
Right.
And so that's the Chargers offense. You play the Chiefs here in a few weeks. Like, if you play, you make the playoffs, you play Josh Allen. Or like, there's still some really good offense in the AFC you're going to have to face. And so they could easily get in a shootout and lose, because if you're going against Josh Allen, he's on. He scores 41 points. Colts could score 40 and lose. And so I think their offense is legit. I think they're clearly like a legit playoff team, win the division, get a home playoff game. Like, I think they're dangerous, but in terms of they are not a Super Bowl contender, because that defense is just not good enough.
No, but here's the thing. They've allowed as many points as the Steelers. That Steelers defense has had some real disappointments. So, coin flip, if you told me today I had to pick which team wins in a playoff game, and obviously it would matter where they play to a degree, but just for this conversation, coin flip, I'm not on the Patriots bandwagon yet. I'm just not. And the Colts are one win away, and the Patriots are the Colts are a loss away, and the Patriots are one more win away from having the same record. It's not as if there's a huge difference, but I guess I would take the Colts over the Patriots. And I'm lukewarm on the Broncos. I don't believe in them. I can't sit here today and say, give me the Colts over the Chargers after what just happened. So to me, the Colts are legit. But I think there's a huge gulf between the best team in the AFC that's not the Bills or the Chiefs and the Bills and the Chiefs. And that team might be the Colts. But normally you've got the Ravens in there creating a little more separation. You've got the Bengals in there creating a little more separation. I think the Colts are good. I'm not yet convinced they're on the level of Kansas City or even Buffalo.
I agree. Right. If those two teams are the tier one, let's say.
Yeah.
I agree. I think the Colts are the top right now, the tier two. But what is the, again, if the size of that gulf is the Atlantic Ocean, great. But what's that really going to get you?
All right, let's play a quick game. We got to go. And I'm kind of picking on teams here, but I'm just going to read you the teams at the top of the divisions in the AFC, of their respective divisions. And just yes or no, do they, it's like the Hall of Fame test. Before you look at the numbers, it's just, does this person strike you as a Hall of Famer, right? Does this team strike you as a Super Bowl level team? The Patriots.
No.
The Steelers.
No.
No. And that's even presuming Aaron Rodgers keeps playing this at a somewhat effective level. The Colts.
No.
No. The Broncos.
No.
No. So that's, the AFC is there for the taking. So if we're wrong on one of those teams, right, if the Broncos or the Patriots or the Colts or the Steelers are a lot better than we're giving them credit for, they're like the Commanders last year. I'm not sure I bought the Commanders this time last year, and they didn't make the Super Bowl, but they got to the NFC Championship game. If one of those teams are markedly better, there's a gap here. There's a world here where you can do it. Now, the Bills and the Chiefs are tough, but in the years ahead, you're going to have the Bills, and you're going to have the Chiefs, and you're going to probably have the Ravens because Lamar's going to be back, and they're going to figure it out, and you're going to have the Bengals because you would presume Joe Burrow's going to be healthy. It's not a bad year to be overachieving if you're one of these teams, because it's never going to be easy, but it's easier than it's been in years past, and it's easier than it's probably going to be in years going forward, and credit the Colts for putting themselves in that position. I'm a little disappointed you're not wearing a Penn State shirt. I really am. Like, you gotta, I just think you gotta rethink it.
No, I feel very strongly about my stance.
I don't have a lot of Cubs stuff anymore, but when the Cubs got eliminated from the playoffs, Henry wore his Cubs shirt the next day. I threw a Cub hat on when I went to the grocery store. I'm telling the world, like, I'm not just a fair weather fan. I'm not just here when things go well. I'm not a hickey. I'm a writer.
But see, I know that deep down I'm a true fan. I don't need to show
anyone else around me. Yeah,
I don't
you
have to portray that I'm a quote-unquote real fan.
You do.
Let me wear my jersey.
You're always wearing sports stuff. You're wearing cold stuff today.
Yeah.
You are portraying.
Because you celebrate the winners. Victory Monday.
Wow.
You don't have loser Monday. I only wear my Penn State hat and jersey and shirt and parade around with white and blue pom-poms.
I love my team no matter what days. You're going to figure this out when you get married. It's not about loving your soon-to-be wife in the good days. It's about loving her in the bad days. For better or for worse.
And I've
that's
seen
the
plenty
value take.
Of bad days with Penn State. And guess
for better
I've
or
stuck
worse.
Around. I don't leave.
Lauren, right? Is she going to... You're not gonna like not like you can pretend she doesn't exist on the days where she like oh she had a bad Tuesday. How's Lauren? We don't talk about her on Wednesdays. So she had a bad Tuesday. Nope.
I'm a Mets fan. I have been through the ringer and I have not left. There's no questioning my loyalty.
I don't know if I'll be invited to the wedding, but if I am, I expect the vow to be for better or better. That's all you got. That's what you get.
I will
baby.
Say I have thought about the joke when the priest goes for richer for poorer. How about just richer, Father?
Yeah, for richer or better. That's all. That's it. That's it. Do you take her for better or worse? No. But I'll do better or better.
For better, yes.
I'll do for better. I'm here for better. Father, have you heard the story about my time as a Notre Dame fan? I'm here for better. All right, you know what else is better? Five things about college football to recap a wild. What was it? What did you call it? What was your alliteration?
Statement Saturday.
Statement Saturday has happened. And what were those statements? Ryan Hickey will tell us after a sports flash from Gordon Damer.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Bill, this Sports Flash is sponsored by Advantage Gold. Before kickoff, get help securing your financial future with Advantage Gold today. Text GOLD to 85545 now and request your free gold investment kit or go to AdvantageGold.com for terms, message, and data rates may apply. Back-to-back losses for the Commanders. Next up on the schedule, the Chiefs in Kansas City. Jaden Daniels, no status for that game, up in the air. Washington quarterback set for an MRI on his injured hamstring. That injury forced him to leave yesterday's loss to the Cowboys in the third quarter. Meanwhile, the Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel already on the hot seat, and that was before his team no-showed in a 31-6 loss to the Browns yesterday. Report today from Ian Rappaport is no changes are planned in Miami at this time. Dolphins face the Falcons next week. Monday Night Football doubleheader to wrap up the week. Bucks, Lions in Detroit, Texans and Seahawks in Seattle. And the best two words in sports, Game 7 tonight in the ALCS. Blue Jays and Mariners. Winner, of course, moves on to face off against the Dodgers in the World Series. Pitching matchup, Shane Bieber and George Kirby on the mound. I'm Gordon Damer.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
My heart's still in Paris. Oui, je ne la parle pas. Napa.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Welcome back into the show. I mean, you'd have to play it again, which you certainly don't need to. I think it's possible not a single one of those words were actually French. I just made all of those up, Ryan.
I know the last word was Napa, and that is definitely not French. That's one of our sponsors. So we could, if Napa wants to go international, Bill Ryder could be the French spokesman for Napa. But that one I know for sure, not French.
I feel like sometimes on the show, we stumble onto magic on accident. For better or better might be one of the all-timers. Rewriting how marriage vows work. Look, half of marriages end in divorce. I just celebrated 20 years. That's not me. It's not going to be you, I hope, I'm sure. But half do. For those people, I can rock a little worse. I got the, but not everybody can. So maybe setting expectations early properly, right? If you're a for better or better person, just get it in the vow.
99% so when, you know, of people don't get divorced because things are going well.
Right. Fast forward 7 years later when you know, well, you don't love me. Like, I don't love you. But remember back when we did better or better, this isn't better. And so I just... Let's just, you get to better, and then we'll talk. Husband of the year.
Or, before you even get to marriage, you say, look, I'm in it for better, better. As soon as things get worse, I'm out. Maybe that makes you reconsider, you know what? Maybe I don't want to be with this person. And you don't even go down the marriage route, and you save a divorce because you get out before it's too late.
I think it's, just, no, I think you rock better or better, and that way it sets a high bar.
It does hold both parties accountable.
It really does. I have cracked the marriage code. Now let's crack the five things code.
Your security clearance is on a need-to-know basis. And these are five things you need to know. Number one.
I love this segment, by the way.
Me too.
Yeah.
You know who must be listening? The University of Florida. Because they clearly signed an agreement with Bill Napier for better, for better. Things are worse, and they said, see you later, Billy.
You're gone.
And they actually even upholded a higher standard. Because guess what? Florida beat Mississippi State on Saturday, Bill, 23-21. Despite the win, Florida still said yesterday goodbye to their head coach. They fired Billy Napier. Now, in his 4 years in Gainesville, Napier is 22-23, becoming the first full-time Florida head coach to finish a losing record since, of course, Raymond Wolf back in the 1940s. The reported top target for the Gators early on, Bill, is Lane Kiffin.
He's the top target every time. All right, here's what I will say. And he's the betting favorite, 2-1. James Franklin's on this list. My guy Eli Drinkwitz is on the list from Mizzou, who I don't want. My Marcus Freeman's on the list. Urban Meyer's 9-1.
Marcus Freeman's on the list, huh?
Yeah. I would hire, I hate to admit it, I don't like Urban Meyer. I would hire Urban Meyer if I were Florida. Like, if I went through the list and I couldn't get some of these guys, I'll say this, and you tell me if you disagree, I would much rather have Urban Meyer than James Franklin in that job. 1,000 times over. For all of his problems. Not you.
The only hesitation I have is that Florida's at a spot. They've never made the college football playoff in like the 4-team or 12-team era. At least, like, Franklin could get them to a spot they haven't been really since Urban Meyer, which is like on the cusp. And so if you hire him just to get you on the cusp and then fire him in 3 or 4 years, but you're kind of right, like, they're a mess right now. At least Franklin could get you to a spot kind of where Penn State is, where you're firing someone with the goal of like taking the next step instead of like building a backup. That's all I would say.
I don't know. Look, if I'm Lane Kiffin, the other thing is, and we discussed this off the air earlier, I don't think I'm taking that job. I'm going to stay in the SEC, but take a program that's a hot mess, that's a disaster, that obviously has issues behind the scenes with uncertain situations with the athletic director and other leadership. I know Ole Miss lost over the weekend, but it was a really good game. They showcase they can compete with the elite. Lane Kiffin has exactly what he needs at Ole Miss. Look, I understand the temptation of Florida. Florida, Texas, USC are the kind of jobs you should always have a chance to win with, because of your tradition and because of your recruiting advantage. But clearly NIL and transfer portal has eliminated some of that edge.
Number two.
Over the weekend, Bill, two top 10 teams fell to unranked opponents as on Friday night, Louisville went into Miami and knocked off the second-ranked Hurricanes 24-21. In that game, Carson Beck threw a career-high 4 interceptions, while Louisville quarterback Miller Moss accounted for 3 touchdowns of his own. Number seven, Texas Tech on Saturday was taken down by Arizona State 26-22 as the Sun Devils punched the ball into the end zone with just 34 seconds left. And for both Miami and Tech, their first loss of the season.
By the way, here's my takeaway. Parity. There is so much parity in college football. And we saw this last year as we got closer to the final slots for the 12-team playoff, how many conferences and how many schools in those conferences had opportunities to win the last 2 or 3 games and get themselves in. I love it. I love it for the sport. And you love it because isn't Arizona State, isn't that the coach you want? Isn't that the guy that you're eyeing? Isn't that your dude for Penn State?
I like Kenny Dillingham. I think that should be a name they absolutely look at and circle. Hopefully.
You stay away from Eli and you can have him all you want.
Deal. Absolute deal.
Sold.
Number three.
Speaking of parity, Bill, this next one highlights that. Vanderbilt off to a 6-1 start for the first time since 1950. And they are now a top 10 team in college football for the first time since 1947, after they knocked off LSU 31-24. The Commodores are ranked 10th in the latest AP poll. They host your Missouri Tigers, who are 15th in the country this weekend. As college game, they will be in Nashville for the second time ever.
I will keep this brief. Nothing, and I mean nothing, underscores that anything is possible in the new era like Vandy being a top 10 team while Mizzou is a top 15 team.
Number four.
Mic drop.
It's true, dude.
Other notable results from the weekend, Bill, saw Georgia, as you mentioned, come back from a 9-point second half deficit to take down Ole Miss 43-35, while Alabama's defense stifled the nation's top offense en route to a 37-20 win over Tennessee. How about this? Notre Dame running back Jeremiah Love rushed for a Notre Dame stadium record 220 yards on a touchdown as Irish took down USC 34-24, while BYU won the Holy War, downing Utah 24-21.
Man, I can't believe they call it the Holy War. That's crazy.
You don't like it?
I mean, I like it. Border War, I thought, was also kind of edgy. If you know the history between Mizzou and Kansas. All right. Here's my overarching... Oh, yeah. Do you want to talk about Notre Dame at all? Your former team? The team you used to love? Anything you got for me?
Look, they run the ball down USC's throat, and it's another game where Lincoln Riley making... I don't say excuses, but... He does not.
USC and Nebraska, I know they're not in here, both not clinging to that sort of idea. There was an opportunity for both those programs to maybe take some steps forward, get the program on even another level up. I don't think there's a job security issue, certainly for Matt Rhule in Nebraska, but just to like get some of the pressure off the guys, both failed miserably. I know they lost, and maybe it's the wrong takeaway. I already know how good Georgia is. Ole Miss, man. They are an elite football team even in that loss. They went toe for they let the game go. I'm not sure they gave it away, but they couldn't hold on to that lead. But my takeaway is Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss can do anything he wants there. He doesn't need to leave unless he wants to go to Mizzou.
Number 5.
Read the fine print at the bottom. Unless he wants to leave for Mizzou.
Which
that.
You would never do. I understand America. Never going to happen.
That is funny. Let's finish with some history, Bill. How about this?
Oh, okay.
Division III Curry College running back Monty Quinn rushed for an NCAA record over the weekend, 522 yards on only 20 carries, as Curry College beat Nichols 71-27. Quinn scored 7 touchdowns, 5 of them came on runs over 50 yards, and broke the previous rushing record that was held, of course, by Heidelberg's Cartel Brooks, who rushed for 465 yards in a game back in 2013.
I don't know Nichols College, but I just know there should be a mercy rule at that level, clearly. Just at a certain point, 400, 300 yards. Why don't you take the guy? Why are you running the score up with the same guy?
They did, but I was reading the article. They did set him down the last 2 drives of the game. So he could have for 600 yards, and they kept running the ball.
Can I do a bonus one?
Please.
Even though they won, we're going to need to talk about Arch Manning at some point again.
Number 6.
Oh, wow. You had a number 6 up your sleeve.
Little bonus.
Bonus. Is Arch bad?
He's not good.
He looks broken. He certainly has no confidence. Do you know who is full of confidence and is going to bring it to the show? Ari Mirov joins me next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Let's talk some NFL with one of the best NFL reporters in the business. Our friend Ari Mirov is the 33rd team NFL reporter, writer, host of the NFL Spotlight Show on YouTube, on, I don't know if it's Twitter or X these, what is it called? X, on X, at My Sports Update. Ari, good morning. Happy Monday. Thanks for being here, man.
Absolutely, Bill. Thanks for having me on. I was just talking about this with the producer. I don't know how we're at the end of week 7 already, but this NFL season just flies.
It is absolutely flying by, and like every NFL season, there are surprises at this juncture. And I want to sort of present one team to you who are on this great run, and just get your take on whether you think they are a legit contender at a sort of Super Bowl contending level, whether it's to be determined, but they're pretty good, or whether they remind you of maybe that Cardinals team, that Arizona team for a few years ago that started strong and faded. How do you assess the Indianapolis Colts at this stage of the season?
I'm fascinated by them. I think they are for real. I mean, I'm here from New York, and I was one of the very few people who was a little bit anti-Giants last year, not anti-Daniel Jones. I thought he was treated unfairly. I think, you know, eventually everyone just got against him, and it just became too much, and I think it was the best thing was to part ways. But seeing him in New York over the last, you know, the start of his career, the playoff run, like, you see the athleticism, you see the ability, you saw what he did in his first year of Brian Daboll. You see the fact that there are coaches around the NFL who have rejuvenated quarterbacks from the Darnolds and the Bakers and all those different types of quarterbacks over these last several years. And there was no reason for me to think that Daniel Jones couldn't do the same. And I think this holds in Indianapolis with Shane Steichen, with the best weapons he's ever had in his career. I mean, you look at what he had with the Giants. Aside from Saquon Barkley, he never had anything. His top receivers were the Kenny Galladays and Kadarius Toneys and Isaiah Hodgins and Richie James. Like, he really never had real guys. And now you go with this great offensive line of Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce and Josh Downs and Tyler Warren, and of course, Jonathan Taylor, who might be the best running back in football right now. I'm not totally surprised by this. It's a really, really cool story, really, really cool team. And he is as confident as he's ever been in his NFL career. And it's another feel-good story in what has become a bit of the norm in recent years around the NFL for some of these quarterbacks.
Ari Mirov here on the show. I'm Bill Ryder. It's Ryder Than You on the Infinity Sports Network. Ari, I'm glad you brought up this rehabilitation, this pattern of rehabilitation for quarterbacks, because I find it to be really interesting. I don't know if you would put Jared Goff on that list, but certainly Sean McVay and the Rams, you know, did not think that he could get them the level they wanted, and he's been great in Detroit. You just sort of, Baker Mayfield's a guy that obviously had to do his stint in Carolina before he became what he is right now, and it's very impressive in Tampa Bay. What are the reasons, do you think, that we're seeing a lot more quarterbacks who have been thrown onto the discard pile, and people like me and fans have said, all right, that guy's washed, suddenly finding ways to resurrect their careers in a league where we didn't see that at that position in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really goes back to coaching. I think from all the sports that there are, from a football, basketball, hockey, baseball, whatever it is, coaching matters so much in football. And really, you look at the last four quarterbacks who were taken number one overall in the NFL draft, all of them had their head coaches fired in their rookie year, from Trevor Lawrence with Urban Meyer, Bryce Young with Frank Reich, Caleb Williams with Matt Eberflus, and now Cam Ward with Ryan Callahan. When you set up your quarterback to not have success with the coaching staff he has around him, he's already in uneven footing. Not to mention that the roster is obviously the worst in football, because of course they had the number one overall pick in the draft. So coaching matters so much in the NFL, and Kevin O'Connell, the Vikings head coach, said this a couple of years ago, that he believes organizations fail young quarterbacks before young quarterbacks fail organizations. I think that quote is very, very true. And these quarterbacks that they're getting picked high, some of them definitely get pushed up the board because the position is so important when it comes to the NFL draft. But there's a reason why they are going in round one. There is something the scouts see. There's something the coaches see. There is talent there for sure. But when you're brought in and the coaching staff is not confident, when the coaching staff potentially has stuff going on behind the scenes, which is what happened in Carolina in year one with Bryce Young, where Frank Reich and his staff were all going behind each other's backs, that sets up quarterbacks to fail. So once Baker Mayfield is out of Cleveland, once Daniel Jones is out of New York, once, you know, all these different quarterbacks are out of those tough situations, Mac Jones even leaving New England and having Matt Patricia as his offensive coordinator for a year, which made no sense. That is a big part of the reason in my mind. And once those guys go to better organizations, we see the talent, which is why they went in the first round in the first place.
It's such a great answer. And I'm going to ask you about somebody where in this moment in time, it's really hard to see any kind of sunshine or rainbow through the dark clouds, but maybe you can see something that we can't, the way you did with Daniel Jones. What is your confidence level, whether in Miami or elsewhere, that Tua Tagovailoa can be rehabilitated at some point?
Yeah. I mean, it's been just crazy to see how this has all unfolded this year. And there was just so much magic there early on with Mike McGowan. He felt like the answer for Tua, right? Like, Tua early on in his career, when Brian Flores was the head coach, he was a mess. And eventually when Brian was fired, he kind of called him out, and, you know, Mike McDaniel came, and it looked like this was the right head coach quarterback pairing. But it feels like it's gotten stale and it's gotten old, and the message is not getting to anybody. And the players just don't have that camaraderie and the togetherness that you're supposed to have within an organization. And it's reached a point where, you know, Tua is at a point where it just doesn't look right. And I don't know it's because of, you know, the contract that he got, or it's the offensive line, which has been really, really bad this year. I mean, some of the plays that the offensive line has had, even in that game on Sunday versus the Browns in the bad weather with the wind and the rain, the offensive line was just getting, you know, tumbled over by the Browns defensive line. Tyreek Hill injury has also not helped at all, but it just feels like the messaging from that coaching staff is just not getting across. And we could definitely point fingers on Tua, and he definitely deserves some blame. The comments he made last week were just unnecessary, basically throwing some players under the bus. But for all the conversations out there about Tua, maybe he needs a fresh start, I don't think people have taken a look at that contract, because he's owed $56 million in guaranteed money next year. There's really no way of getting out of it. If you want to move on from after this season, it's $99 million in dead money, which is basically impossible to move on from. So they're going to have to keep him. And really the only way to kind of revive his career, which is what we're talking about right now, I think is finding a new person in that building, because clearly the Mike McDaniel magic that was there over the first few years has gone away. And this was always a concern of Mike McDaniel. Like, when you're winning, it's all great with him, right? But how does he react? How does his message get across when there's adversity, when the team is losing? And clearly that happened off the bat in week one when they lost to the Colts, and they've never been able to turn it around ever since.
Ari, I know it takes two to tango, and so it's this next question, the answer is going to be more nuanced than one or the other. But when you look at that remarkable comeback by the Denver Broncos and or debacle by the New York Giants in that fourth quarter, does that, do you think, tell you more or indicate more truths about Denver or about New York?
I think it probably goes both ways, but I'm going to focus a little bit more here on the Giants, because that was a team that was coming off a really impressive win over the Eagles on Thursday night. They had 10 days off, and just some of the mistakes that they made in that fourth quarter. It's not just that, you know, they were up 19-0 and then they blew their lead. They blew the lead while also scoring two touchdowns in that fourth quarter, which just makes it even crazier when you put that into context. But there were just some stuff that happened over the course of the game. The fact that they were throwing with Jackson Dart, especially when you have Cam Scadaboo, our running back, in that interception, there was no reason to be throwing the ball. This is the third time that I would put blame on Brian Daboll and Joe Shane that they've had a kicker issue within this organization. Last year, their kicker came into the game with an injury. He re-aggravated it in warm-ups. They did not have a kicker. It happened again earlier this season. And now, in this game, their kicker is somebody who has never kicked from over 40 yards. The only reason he's on the roster is because of an international program the NFL has, so he doesn't really count towards the roster limit during the offseason. He's not an NFL kicker, and as a result, he misses two extra points yesterday. And the reality is, they had Younghoe Koo, who was once an All-Pro for the Falcons, on their practice squad. We're seeing teams around the NFL signing guys as free agents and hitting. In the Packers game, a guy was signed off the streets hitting a 61-yard field goal. That goes on the coaching staff. And then the defensive coordinator, Shane Bowen, dropping eight when they have four elite guys on the defensive line with Dexter Lawrence and Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau and Abdul Carter is inexcusable. And it's the second time it's happened this season. The same thing happened in week two versus the Cowboys when they lost that game. It makes no sense. The coaching was an abomination in that fourth quarter. And there's a lot of blame right now in New York, and I'm keeping a very close eye on the situation of the defensive coordinator, Shane Bowen, because I think his job is definitely up in the air right now here on Monday morning in New York.
Ari Mirov, a lot of folks that listen to the show hate the Kansas City Chiefs. I do not hate the Chiefs. I lived in Kansas City. I covered that team back in my newspaper writing days at the Kansas City Star. But I understand that we get sort of tired and frustrated in all sports with, or some people do, with the same teams winning again and again and again. And some of those folks that did not want to see the Chiefs do what they always do, which is to compete at a minimum at a sort of an AFC championship level or beyond, were pretty excited until the Chiefs won a couple games in a row. They've won 4 or 5, obviously big game against the Lions. They dominated the Raiders. They're healthy now. Rashee Rice looked really good. They're in rhythm, even though they're 4-3, and I know that's not a 6-1 Colts record or even a 5-2 Patriots record. Do you still just have to look at them and say they're the team to beat in the AFC until they're not?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are the team to beat in the AFC, and I found it funny when people were like, "Oh, they're 0-2. This is great. This is still the Chiefs. It's still Patrick Mahomes. I still believe in that defense." And the thing that was being said all offseason long, and even during the season, from people in that building and that coaching staff, is wait till Rashee Rice comes back and see how our offense opens up. And we kind of saw a glimpse of it yesterday. Rashee Rice, they believe, is a top 10, top 5 receiver in football. That organization believes in him that much. And when they have him on the field with Marquise Hollywood Brown and Xavier Worthy and Travis Kelce and the offensive line at full strength and Patrick Mahomes playing the way he is, they believe their offense could be 2019-2020 Kansas City Chiefs. And that is where it becomes kind of scary. And they were a team that, you know, when they were on that 0-2 start, I was like, they just need to get to 3-3 after these six games. If they can do that, they'll be perfectly fine. And the division, it started off, you know, the Chargers started 3-0. It looked like, oh, this could be the first year they don't win the AFC West. The AFC West has kind of lost a couple of games there. They're right there in the division. None of this really surprises me. And that should be the storyline every single year. I mean, they keep on making the Super Bowls until a team defeats them come January. Nobody should put them in second place in the AFC. That's just the simple reality of it. Until somebody defeats number 15, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, they are the team to beat in the AFC. And this is the one thing to watch over here now. As we get close to November and the trade deadline, I think they have at least one more move up their sleeve somewhere on this team to try to get this team even better. Brent Veach, every single year, the last few years, their GM has made a trade, whether last year it was something as minor as DeAndre Hopkins, or they could go and do something bigger. I would keep an eye on Kansas City because they believe this roster where it's at right now is the best they've had the last couple of years, especially offensively.
That is not music to the ears of most people out there, but I love the answer, and it is great. It's just great insight. Ari Mirov, great stuff, man. Love having you on. You're right. I cannot believe we're this deep into the NFL season. Thanks for trying to help us make sense of where we are.
Anytime, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, buddy. Ari Mirov on the show, 33rd Team NFL reporter, writer extraordinaire, host of the NFL Spotlight Show over on YouTube. You can find that and all Ari's great work at My Sports Update. Do not sleep on the Chiefs. They're probably going to be in the Super Bowl. Again. 888-710-4ISN. Not the Colts, Ryan. Not the Colts. You going to wear a Chiefs jersey tomorrow? You going to a little Chiefs jersey tomorrow?
Can I throw this unbiased, I guess, fact, if you will, by you?
I love unbiased facts.
On ESPN, their, I guess, predictive model has the Chiefs as a team to beat in the AFC.
Yeah.
The second highest team with the world. Right. Team with the second highest percentage to win the AFC?
Yeah.
Indianapolis Colts.
Says a lot more about
higher
ESPN
about the Bills
than it does the Colts, unfortunately.
It's not just me. That's all I got to say. Unbiased, of course, ESPN.
That's the company you want to keep, but you do you. You know what? You're going to keep doing you because Ryan's going to give us a bunch of topics. We'll give you some takes. It's buy or sell. Talking some baseball. Little Game 7 ALCS action next year on Rather Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Dan Campbell, talking to an Odyssey radio station, says the football equivalent of, I've seen Bigfoot. And I'll explain next year on Writer Than You.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. There's a movie coming out that's freaking people out because it's a documentary that apparently just proves there's aliens. I don't think Dan Campbell said that. With Odyssey. He did do the Bigfoot thing.
That could be next week, though. Never say never.
You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. You know what else I'm right about? It's time for Buy or Sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
All right, Bill. So as we talked about earlier in the show, Florida is the latest big-time school to fire their head coach in season, as Billy Napier was canned yesterday. The Gators now join Penn State, Virginia Tech, Arkansas, UCLA, Oklahoma State, and Stanford as the Power Four jobs that are currently open. Now, other potential openings at some point later or after the season could include schools like Florida State, LSU, Wisconsin, and Auburn. Buy or sell, Bill. Florida will be the best head coach opening this cycle.
I mean, Penn State's a really good job. LSU's a really good job. I think Auburn can be a really good job. Well, at least it has a tradition history of being good. I'll reluctantly buy.
Buy.
The right answer might be Penn State, by the way. It might be Penn State. But Florida's recruiting base, just the recruiting base of that state, I still think gives it a little bit of an edge. Some of that, too, is what conference do you want to coach in? I mean, the SEC is obviously incredibly prestigious. It's also brutal. And even though the Big Ten has won the last couple national championships, it might win again this year. Ohio State very well may be the last team standing. I still, My first instinct, Ryan, is that the Big Ten is not quite as formidable a place to keep your job, right? To survive as the SEC. But maybe I'm undercutting Oregon and I'm undervaluing a little bit Indiana. Buy or sell, you would agree that if you're a coach just trying to just to succeed, it's easier in the Big Ten than the SEC.
Buy.
I think also in part because the leash, usually people are more patient.
I agree.
If Wisconsin was in the SEC, I think Luke Fickell's already fired.
Wisconsin's down. Michigan is down. I mean, Iowa is just Iowa. Nebraska has been underwhelming. I mean, there aren't. Vandy's a top 10 team in the country right now.
That they are.
Now, Indiana, the counter argument is Indiana is also, for the Big Ten, a surprise team to step up.
Number two.
Buy or sell, Indiana is the second best football team in America.
Buy.
Okay, you think they are? You think they're that good?
I think they're that good. I had some real doubts. I think going to Oregon and winning that game decidedly.
Yeah.
I did not buy in. I think after a win like that, I'm bought in. They seem legit.
Buy or sell, you think Penn State's the best job?
Buy.
Nick Saban's not taking it. Mrs. Saban, Mrs. Terry said, hell no. You losers. Firing our guy, James Franklin.
What a puff piece that was, huh?
It really was. Jeez. It really was. They did you wrong. Did they?
Oh, boy. Well, speaking of
By the way, Saban never lost more than two games an entire season at Elba.
After you won.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I mean,
not including the sort of... And that year, I think... They made a bowl that year, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. I think they were like 7-6, I think
it was. And they weren't expected to be good that season.
That was the year they lost to UL Monroe in year one of Nick Saban's Alabama tenure. Man, imagine they fired him after that game.
Easy for him to say. I mean, look, I respect him being kind to the coaching fraternity. Very easy for him to say. It's like a multi-billionaire saying that guy shouldn't have been laid off. Shouldn't have been fired. Okay, man. Cool. Thanks, Mrs. Terry. And that's nice of her. She did give Lane Kiffin a little shout-out, though.
Yeah. She loves Lane. Loves Kirby Smart.
Loves Kirby.
She's looking out for her former guys. That's all.
Yes, she is. I respect it.
Plenty of surprise teams, Bill. Litter the AP top 10 heading into week 9 of the college football season, as we just mentioned. Indiana now number 2 in the country after their resounding win over Michigan State, while Vanderbilt is a top 10 team for the first time since 1947 after they beat LSU. Georgia Tech comes in this week, ranked 7th in the country. They are 7-0 in the ACC. And while BYU lost their quarterback back in the summertime, they're 7-0. They're ranked 11th in the country. Buy or sell, Vanderbilt is the best story of the college football season so far.
Okay, I'm going to buy. I'm going to lean into this. I understand what you're saying. Let me ask you a question. Buy or sell, the best story can be something that's negative.
Ooh. That's a great one. I'm going to sell that.
Sell.
Because you could say I think the biggest story and the best story are two different.
You're going to, it's going to hit a little home for you. A little close to home for you. But if you followed Todd McShay's fairly aggressive, candid, I would say accurate, reflections on James Franklin.
Oh, I've seen him. I've seen the multiple shots he's taken.
I'm not the only one who's pointed out that James Franklin's highly unlikable. And there's a perspective of arrogance and unlikability and unkindness there. One of the best stories for me is watching him get fired. And I'm sorry that's your pen. I mean, I'm not really that sorry, but I'm trying to pretend that I'm sorry that that's your team. I actually find it very funny.
But I did not. It's the biggest story.
Buy or sell, it's true that I did not text you on Saturday.
Buy.
Yeah, I didn't text you.
You waited 24 hours. Oh, you could. I mean, look, you could text me. You can,
I'm not that guy. I'm not you.
You can talk the talk if you want. You could have sent me an Iowa gift. You could have.
I'm not you.
Make a play on words in a negative way with Penn State.
I know what it's like to feel that, and I didn't want to do that to you because I'm a good person.
Thanks, Bill. Never a doubt.
Bye, I'm the best.
Sell.
Okay.
Remember, this is an honest buy or sell. You said that early on.
It was the right answer. It was definitely the correct answer.
Oh, the Commanders, Bill, in the NFL lost to the Cowboys on Sunday and also potentially lost their quarterback as well. Jaden Daniels injured his hamstring in the third quarter. We'll get an MRI later today, so we'll learn the severity of that hamstring injury. Looking ahead, Washington right now, they're 3-4 in the season. They've lost three out of the last four games. They are at the Chiefs on Monday Night Football next week. And of the 10 remaining games they have left, eight are against teams that are 500 or better. Buy or sell, Bill? The Commanders are more likely to miss the playoffs right now than make it.
I will buy. That
buy
is the exact thought that I had when he went into the tent. See, when he came out, he gave the thumbs up. I think to his family. Yeah, they were already, it's amazing how much they felt like the Texans from last year. They already felt like they were missing whatever magic had been there the year before. And I don't think Jaden Daniels has been bad, but there's been obviously, the NFL's adjusted to him, right? And that's before he got injured. A not very good team losing their most important player, that strikes me as a non-playoff team.
And you hit it, we were talking about it before yesterday, like even before he got hurt, they were not playing well. The defense was getting ripped apart. The offense was not playing as well as it should have been against a bad Cowboys defense. It's not good.
Not to make everything about the Chiefs, but this is another thing that's just amazing about them. It's not easy to win year after year in the NFL because of injuries, because of the way the cap works, that there's roster turnover and there's restrictions as guys' deals come up or as they improve. And just because the league adjusts to you. And the better you are, the more they're working to adjust you. I'm telling you, and every NFL team the Chiefs play put more effort into them than they do to the other teams on their roster or on their schedule. And the Commanders were going to get a lot more attention this year because of how good they were last year. I'm sure not the coordinators and teams aren't game planning for the team in front of them or taking them seriously, but you only have so much time in the day. Football coaches are notorious workaholics. You have to assess who's more dangerous, and you got to put a lot more energy into that team. And so if you're really good, it's going to be harder to maintain the year after. So the fact that Chiefs do it year after year after year after year is pretty amazing. And by the way, I'd probably put the Eagles on that list. I mean, I know that they've had some disappointments, but they have been outstanding every year. Now, some years they've kind of crashed at the end of the season a little bit, or they've struggled at certain points, and they've had some drama. But that level of consistency is really hard to accomplish. It's what makes Bill Belichick at UNC so baffling. He did it for 20 years.
You're right about that. You're very right about that. Colts running back Jonathan Taylor, Bill, feasted on the Chargers defense yesterday, scoring three touchdowns as Indy won 38-24. Taylor leads the NFL in rushing yards with 697 and total touchdowns 11, while becoming the fourth player in NFL history to have three separate games of three touchdowns or more through a team's first seven games of the season. Buy or sell? Jonathan Taylor is a legitimate MVP candidate.
Okay, I'm going to buy.
Buy.
I think it's very, 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 very unlikely he's going to win because of the position that he plays. Baker Mayfield's on that list for me. I mean, dude, Patrick Mahomes is maybe the top of that list for me. I don't know what the odds are. I would put money on Josh Allen right now just because they've lost a couple games in a row. You're probably going to get a better number than you would have 3 weeks ago. But yes, I think that your running back of the team that you're wearing a hoodie of right now is certainly in that conversation.
The Jaguars were boat raced in London, falling to the Rams 35-7. Matthew Stafford threw five touchdowns, with three of them going to Davante Adams, as Jacksonville lost their second straight game to fall to 4-3. Jaguars, though, do have an easy road moving forward, Bill. Of their remaining 10 games, four of them right now are against teams with a winning record. Buy or sell? The Jaguars are still a playoff caliber team in your mind.
I think they are a buy. I think they are. And in a lot of ways, that Chiefs game to me is the sort of deciding factor. Buy or sell, if the Jaguars make the playoffs and win a game, you will consider Trevor Lawrence to have been rehabilitated at the same level as the other guys I was talking to Ari with about. Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, that level of player.
Buy.
I'll buy that, yeah. That's, I mean, right? Like, it's not like he's going to be along for the ride. He's going to have to make plays, make throws in order for the Jaguars to make the playoffs and win a game. Absolutely. I think he's in that category for sure.
Buy or sell, you would be more surprised if the Jags won a playoff game than if the Colts made it to the AFC Championship game.
Ooh.
Wow, that's tough. I will
sell.
You don't buy the Colts either.
Well, I mean, if they get the right matchup, they could. I mean, if you get the number one seed, you have to win one game at home. And
that's what I mean. You get the bye.
And if the Chiefs are the two seed, let's say, you don't have to worry about them. And the Bills, I mean, let's just get really crazy here. Colts 1, Chiefs 2, Bills 3. So the Bills and Chiefs have to play each other in round 2.
And the Colts play the Steelers? Colts host the Steelers?
If that's how it breaks down, I
feel. You can win
that game. Absolutely. And the Jaguars, look, they're not playing. And look, can't play Kansas City, probably can't play Buffalo. So you have to really get lucky here with your matchup. We just talked about before, there's not many teams that like you truly fear right now. So it's not crazy for the Jaguars to go on the road to win a playoff game. It's wide open.
Patriots feel beatable?
Absolutely. It's a toss-up. It's a toss-up. Trailing 19-0, Bill, in the fourth quarter. And 28-6 later on in the fourth quarter. The Broncos scored 33 points in the final frame to beat the Giants 33-32. Denver totaled 231 yards of offense in that final quarter. And the 33 points are the most in NFL history by a team that was shut out through the first three quarters of the game. Buy or sell, you were more impressed with the Broncos' offense than you were disappointed by the Giants' defense.
I'm going to sell that.
Sell.
Very impressed by Denver, very unimpressed by New York, obviously. It's basically the question I asked Ari, so I'll answer it. I'm going to slightly tweak it that the Giants' defense and the play calling by the Giants' offensive coordinator and the head coach, and the game plan. This ain't a Super Bowl, I get it. But it was a quarter and a half. Maybe just study history. Remember the Falcons-Patriots game. Run the football a little bit. I mean, just... this is why you don't take anything for granted. You don't take anything for granted.
No, you don't. No, you do not.
Also, buy or sell, you think Jackson Dart is the quarterback of the Giants' future for the next 30 years?
Buy.
You do.
They're going to put him in a time machine. He's never going to age. He's going to remain 24 years old for the entirety of his career, and he's going to not only surpass, blow Tom Brady out of the water.
Some random person, I don't remember who it was, but some random on X pronounced Jackson Dart the quarterback of the future for the next 20 years. That means he'd be 42 or 43 when he's still achieving.
Wow. That's a high bar to set.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not like the Giants have had bad quarterbacks. They've had Eli Manning probably going to the Hall of Fame. Sims has won a Super Bowl.
Like 20 years. He's the
wow.
Never seen anything like it, the person said.
Wow, really?
Do you watch football? Anyway.
Wow. Never seen anything like it in his life. Wow.
Never seen. I don't know. Whatever. I don't know why I'm talking about randoms on Twitter, but just it struck me.
People love to get caught up in the moment, Bill. Even in a loss. Yeah. How about
that? Most people are sheep, and they just go with the herd.
That's also very true. You are not wrong about that. It continues to go from bad to worse for two AFC East teams. The Dolphins were blown out and embarrassed by the Browns in Cleveland to fall to 1-6 on the season, while the Jets benched their quarterback and lost to the Panthers to fall to 0-7 on the season. Buy or sell, Aaron Glenn will be fired before Mike McDaniel.
Oh, that's a good question. Losing to the Panthers is very egregious.
Hey, they're 4-3. First time they're over 500. Since 2021. How about that?
It's still egregious. I mean, where else are you going to get a W?
Well, that's also very, you look at the schedule. I mean, they do play the Dolphins one more time.
Okay. Maybe. I don't know, man.
But
I don't know.
In the season,
I'll bet on the Dolphins. I'll sell. I think Aaron Glenn makes it to the day to Black Monday, and I don't know if Mike McDaniel does. Buy or sell, you think Justin Fields has been let down by Aaron Glenn and not the other way around?
Sell.
Buy or sell, Justin Fields is the worst quarterback in the NFL this year.
Man, I like him. Buy.
Buy.
Yeah. That was mean.
I know.
It's a good question.
Because also, it's not like I was with you. I thought they're building the offense around Fields for the first time. He's going to succeed.
Right.
They're going to be competitive. Maybe not make the playoffs, but they'll be a tough out.
Famous last words. We'll show you, Mike Tomlin. Oops. Oops.
Oops is right. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So let's finish with the baseball, Bill, because guess what? We are getting seven games In the ALCS, okay. The Blue Jays beat the Mariners 6-2 last night to force the deciding Game 7. Now, it's going to be in Toronto, but the home team in Game 7 has not fared very well. In baseball history, home teams in Game 7 are just 30-29, and they've lost 7 of the last 8 winner-take-all games.
That's now, crazy.
Right?
Remember I told you home field doesn't matter in baseball?
That stat backs it up.
Didn't even know that stat.
How crazy is that?
That is crazy.
George Kirby on the bump for the Mariners while Shane Bieber takes the hill for Toronto. Buy or sell?
The Biebs.
No. Biebs.
Different Biebs.
The Blue Jays will win Game 7.
Sell. And that's pure heart. Sell. I have nothing to do. You have all the facts. I want the Mariners to win.
History's on their side. Home teams don't fare well.
Come on.
Road teams are 4-2 in this series. Well, the home teams have.
Yeah, you're right.
Home teams have won the last 2 games.
Because the Mariners won the first 2, didn't they?
Right, and then the Blue Jays won the next 2 on the road.
That's so bizarre.
It's been an unpredictable series.
Buy or sell, you like the 2-3-2 model. I do, by the way.
Buy.
I wish the NBA would go back to it.
Yeah,
but the Mariners have never won a World Series. I mean, it's not that they have a historical weight they have to get through tonight.
They've never even been
in contention. Yeah, right.
So this is you are right about that. There's probably more pressure.
History is not with them. I think that's what matters in baseball, especially.
And do you think being up 2-0 has anything to do with it, too? Like, they have full control.
Yes, I do. I think that the pressure is absolutely real. They really need to get out off to a hot start tonight. And even then, it's a coin toss. Honestly, it's probably almost certainly the Blue Jays. But I'm going to stick with my answer because I want the Mariners to win. All right, let's talk a little more Tua Tagovailoa. And let's talk about Penn State. After we get a sports flash from Gordon Damer.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Bill, the Sports Flash is sponsored by Prize Picks. Football is heating up. Basketball is back. So download the Prize Picks app and use promo code PRIMETIME. Get $50 in bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. No better 2 words than sports. Game 7, we get one tonight. ALCS, Blue Jays, Mariners square off north of the border for a trip to the World Series on the line. John Schneider, ready to turn to Shane Bieber on the mound.
Got to enjoy it, man. You know, this is what we sign up for. Whenever you can play for Game 7 to go to the World Series, it sounds kind of cool to say it, you know.
George Kirby gets the start for Seattle. Week 7 comes to a close tonight. Couple of Monday Night Football games. Bucks, Lions in Detroit. Also, the Seahawks face the Texans. D'Amico Ryans knows what Sam Darnold brings to the table.
He's able to deliver the football at all 3 levels of the football field. Right, does a really nice job of throwing the ball deep. JSN did a really nice job making plays on the football as well. So, and they protect it well. So he's done a good job of, you know, spreading the ball around, making good decisions with the football, and that's why he's, you know, been having a really good year.
I'm Gordon Damer.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here on Ryder Than You. This portion of the program is sponsored by Square. More than 4 million neighborhood businesses run on Square. To learn more, go to square.com or just stop by your favorite local business. See you in the neighborhood, Square. Tua Tagovailoa is a hot damn mess. He really is. So first, and by the way, it takes a lot when you're playing as badly as he is playing. He has been abysmal. He's been awful. He was awful this past weekend in that loss to the Browns. It takes a lot for your off-field comments, leadership, approach, vibe to be even more problematic than your level of play when you're playing at the level that Tua is playing at. And yet, not that long ago, he complained after last week's loss that his teammates were really the problem because they weren't coming to meetings on time and it was a huge thing. And then he sort of apologized. You know, it's not even an apology. And it's the void of silence that really got me with the awkward weirdness of the... You know what it is? It's the phoniness. I don't mind awkward. I don't mind weird. It's phony. Let me just remind you how Tua was talking before he took the field against the Browns.
I've made a mistake, and I'm owning up to that right now. You know, I've talked to guys on the team about it, talked to the leaders about it. They know my heart. They know that the intent was right. But no matter the intent, you know, the intent can be right. But when things get misconstrued or however the media wants to portray it, you know, that leaves a void of silence and a lot of questions for the guys on our team.
I mean, I have a lot of questions. I'm sure the guys in the team do after hearing those words. That is the most mealy-mouthed, non-apology, inauthentic, blame other people. First he blamed his teammates, then he blamed the media for reporting, not even reporting accurately, just here's what he said. It's not a void of silence, it's a reflection of you, Tua. And then after he took the field, threw three interceptions, looked like he didn't, you know what he looked like? He looked like a left-handed quarterback who's right-handed. That's what he looked like in that game. Let's try left, like the Princess Bride. I actually am left-handed, but he's not, right? He looked awful. He came out, and this was his approach to taking responsibility.
Just trying to maneuver everything and trying to build a collection of guys to kind of bring along with me. And I got to be able to kind of be able to multitask, if that makes sense. Be able to do that, and while doing that, kind of continue to get the whatever it was last year and the years prior for myself to get going again and get in that flow.
I'm glad he asked the question, whatever that was, because I don't know either. Build a collection of guys? I know it's easy wherever we're sitting, wherever you're listening. Thank you for listening to the show here on the Infinity Sports Network to just go, he misspoke. But think about if you're at the office, right? And your boss comes to talk to you. He's like, look, you know, you're not selling enough of the widgets, or you're not doing enough of this, or we really need TEP reports to be a little format, a little different. Like, oh, what do you want me to do? Well, I need you to build. I'm gonna build the collection of guys, all right? And there's a void of silence when people speak to you in ways that don't make any sense and insult your intelligence, as if you just have to sit there and pretend that what they're saying is sensible. And I've had bosses like this. It makes you utterly doubt their leadership. At my first job in Arkansas, I was a newspaper reporter. My editor was a great guy named Todd, but like a boss named David called me in and sat me down, sort of give me a speech about how to write and writing. And he goes, you know, Jim Steinbeck. Now, just let me pause here. The author's name is John Steinbeck, but the guy gave me a 20-minute speech on Jim Steinbeck and when Jim Steinbeck writes, and kept calling him Jim like he knew him. I actually had to go and see if John Steinbeck had a famous cousin or something who wrote. My point is, I never took that guy seriously ever again. And whatever we do, wherever we work, when people speak in ways that don't make sense, that are nonsensical, that are inauthentic, they lose you. They lose you for. You think these grown-ass men, these alphas, these professional athletes who have literally had their blood and their sweat and their tears and their toil expended to get themselves in the National Football League, listen to this guy say things like build a collection of guys and void of silence after the way that he plays and go, you know what, I can rebuild this guy, I'm in, let's go. I know the Anthony Richardson thing with the Colts was like on the nose, like I got tired, so I took myself out. This is almost that level of just obnoxiousness. You can play at the highest of levels and come out and I guess say these things. The guy's gonna be like, whatever, but the guy can ball. The guy can play. This guy can't play. And so you've got to be able to lead until you figure out how to get to the level you're supposed to get. You have to instill belief. And Tua can't do it on the field, and he's going out of his way not to do it off the field. Total and utter disaster. All right, Ryan, let me ask you the question I asked Ari Mirov earlier, because I'm not wrong when I'm saying about Tua right now. He is a disaster, and the things he's saying are a joke. We've seen Baker Mayfield struggle in Carolina. We saw Sam Darnold get run out of town. We saw Daniel Jones get run out of town. There's a long list of guys who have been. We saw Jared Goff get run out of town after he and his offense, he put up 6 points in the Super Bowl, right? I mean, it happens. Do you think in 4 or 5 years we'll have had a season where this narrative is, Tua did it. He turned his career around. Even if he's the 10th best quarterback in the NFL. I am high. I know I got to not be too captive of the moment. I'm highly skeptical because the combination of how badly he's playing and how obnoxiously he's communicating through his poor play, to me, is a really worrisome combo.
The last part you just said is why I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I think he has the talent. And like you said, there are plenty. He's in the quarter in the category of Daniel Jones where if you have a good team around him, could he succeed? Yes. Guys like Daniel Jones, guys like Baker Mayfield, guys like Sam Darnold.
Right.
You hear him. It's one thing that's like, okay, grumbled reports out of the, you know, maybe it's just a disgruntled teammate. He's saying, we're hearing it from his own mouth, how bad of a leader he is. He has no control or seemingly respect from the locker room. I don't think that's going to change going to another place. And if it doesn't, I don't see how he's going to succeed, even if the situation is better.
You know what all those guys have in common, other than maybe Jared Goff? They all have had to be backup quarterbacks or quarterbacks competing for the starting job, not the designated starter in Baker's case. And in those situations where they were once top draft picks, faces of franchises, and then humbled, they carry themselves as professionals. They carry themselves as, this is my role. And if you go back and you remember like Sam Darnold before McCarthy got hurt, all the other things, if you remember, just if you look at how they talked about their job, they did it the way you're supposed to, where you I'm here to be a backup, I'm going to help the team. There's a professionalism that was a part of the reason they could get back to being the guy. And we haven't seen that from Tua Tagovailoa. Everyone at this level has the talent. Everyone has the talent. The other intangibles are the things that are going to help that talent succeed or not succeed, and it's hard to assess those often. It's not hard with Tua because he's out there telling us about voids of silences and building a collection of guys and just mealy-mouth nothingness. There's no there. And that, it is a huge problem. Fun show today. Thank you to Ari Miroff for being on the program. Appreciate his time. Thank you to Gordon Damer for stepping in for our guy Andrew Bogus. Great job on updates. Great work from you, Ryan Hickey. Great job. And I'm going to see you this week. Bill's in studio Friday is coming up. Are you excited?
The countdown is already on. Very excited.
He'll call in six. It's a pattern. I'm Bill Ryder. Thank you for listening. We appreciate you. We'll see you back here tomorrow on Ryder Than You.